Maybe we should just go.
Okay, we're set. Okay, so first off, what's your name, role? What do you do for Boston Calling?
So, Michael Snow, Boston Calling Events, co-founder. Mostly work on site orientation, layout, build, strike, and then, you know, ultimately, like, the crossover between the rest of us and this office is, you know, really marketing. There's kind of three of us with marketing and promotion backgrounds, so we all get to chime in on brand strategy and brand creation and alteration and, you know, that part of it, which is like the fun off-season stuff.
Yep.
When you're not talking about, you know, forklifts and porta potties and,
you know,
mythos lights and whatever else. Yeah.
All that fun jazz
everybody loves
to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so you said you were one of the co-founders.
Correct, yeah.
So what was some of the inspiration in creating Boston Calling? What were some of your main reasons?
I mean, we, you know, looked around and we didn't have a festival, right? The way that people enjoyed sort of outdoor music here in Boston was very much in a sports arena setting. Mm-hmm. And that to us was, you know, kind of unfortunate. And growing up, I grew up, you know, just north of the city. You know, Suffolk Downs was used a couple of times for some outdoor stuff. The old Gillette parking lot was used for a couple of Warped Tours. I think there was one or two Brockton Fairgrounds, you know.
Some, yeah.
But they were all like punk and metal events, right? They weren't like music festivals. So even like when Horde or Lollapalooza, one of those things came through, yeah, it was down at the Shed, which fine, it's good, you know. But we really looked at it as there's nothing in the heart of Boston that's outdoors. And it's challenging. You know, the public parks don't really allow the sale of alcohol, which I totally understand, but not conducive to a music festival.
Yep.
So we had used City Hall Plaza and the Hat Shell, you know, periodically throughout our radio careers and print careers. So we really liked City Hall. You know, we had a lot of conversations with our old company. They weren't really interested. You know, we started having outside conversations with a lot of interested people, and we just thought Boston as a marketplace with its background and you know, accessibility by public transit, and people had this familiarity of coming from around New England and they know where to park to get on the subway to go to wherever they want to go.
Yep.
Because we have super successful sports teams, so a lot of it came from there. So yeah, I mean, it was really, you know, that hometown pride if you want to have something that everybody else has. We saw, you know, Chicago, Atlanta, you know, to some extent, you know, LA, and a lot of, you know, Santa Barbara, San Francisco, like all of these West Coast towns, and even Vegas to some extent. They all, music festivals were like part of their DNA.
Yep.
And, you know, we kind of looked at Boston as it has everything else but that.
Yep.
You know, we have great museums. We have great, you know, obviously the Boston Ballet we're working with this year. You know, we've got a lot of various culture fairs. I mean, mm-hmm. Now, you know, the Burbs are sort of popping up where, you know, there's so much more in Somerville and Cambridge and Medford and even, you know, Quincy from when we started.
Yep.
Doing some outdoor events. So yeah, I think all of it was sort of, it was the right time for Boston.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I know from my experience, like, I live in New York, so like the East Coast festival scene is sort of new.
Yep.
I guess it's primarily in the West Coast with big events in California, and so it's nice to see that sort of migrate over to the East Coast. I definitely like,
yeah,
I appreciate it. Yeah,
I think a lot of it, you know, the weather's far less risky. Their season's so much longer.
Yep.
I think, you know, you commonly had people going, you know, sort of from the early 90s with the Seattle sort of grunge era. LA's always had a massive music scene.
Yep.
So I think, you know, it was kind of, if you want to, like, coast to coast, like, sure, we have New York City and you know, they have Randall's Island and Gumball and many other things, you know. They had the big World's Fair site, you know, they have two baseball stadiums,
yep.
It's like, you know, they have two basketball arenas, you know. It's one of those things where, yeah, like that sort of whatever. And, you know, even our radio career, we knew a fellow who started a, you know, festival up in, you know, upstate Maine, you know, and there's been plenty of, you know, Watkins Glen and Fish style shows and you know, up in Vermont and these different sites, but no like site, right? Like no like kind of pinnacle place. And you know, being from Boston, it's like, well, Boston's like the heart of New England, so it's got to be here, you know.
Yep.
So, and
yep,
I think we kind of, we bent that a little bit.
Yeah. As for this year, is there anything like new or exciting happening at this year's festival or anything you're looking forward to, really?
Yeah, so, there's always different parts and pieces. I mean, I mentioned the Boston Ballet, where we're going to put a ballet on an outdoor stage.
That's pretty new.
Logistically, that takes a little bit more than you think.
Yep.
You know, this is not, you know, your brother-in-law's daughter's like dance recital, right? It's like
professional company.
There's a very short list of like, we can't perform without these things.
Yep.
So like those type of things, it's been fun to learn about. And then, you know, from there, you know, obviously the performers are different every year. You know, having seen some of the background of almost all of our headliners, and, you know, Anderson, Odessa, you know, kind of everybody at the top, they're their performances are stepping up with yep. just all the extras, the lights, the pops, the bangs, the pyro, just the set pieces. Yeah. You know, Anderson's set piece is the biggest thing we will have ever built actually physically on one of our stages. Okay. It's like 72 feet long or something.
That's
like
crazy.
The set piece. You know, Travis's set pieces are
insane.
Just outlandish. I mean, not the roller coaster.
I was going to say, there's no way you could travel with that roller coaster that he has.
There's a limit. We had heard that the roller coaster part of that tour was like 15 semi-trucks. So
thankfully,
made it a little smaller for us. But same thing, you know, we kind of just went on that. So that every year to us, like, sort of continues the adventure. You know, it's like when you look at what we were able to do on the plaza when a band showed up, it was like two semi-trucks and it was half their instruments and maybe a specialty, you know, floor lighting thing.
Yep.
You know, so from kind of the nerdy back perspective, like, I'm pretty excited to see this style of production. I mean, Tool certainly had very unique production. Eminem had very unique production. But we've got like seven very unique, you know, set pieces. Yep. Mumford, you know, had these very large, you know, panel walls that we had installed. But, you know, I'm not a production director by trade of any kind, so I'm still a little bit fascinated when you stand back and be like, wow, I didn't know our stage could do that. That's
exactly,
cool.
Yeah.
So I'm more excited this year about sort of what's going on the stage with these different shows than in years past. It just seems like there's just a lot more big show feeling to the production, which, you know, I'm a music guy by trade. It's like, you know, you go to listen, but like when you stand there and it's all happening, you're like, this is pretty exciting.
It's the immersive experience of it all, like seeing the screens and the lights and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, we're doing like a, you know, a 10th edition sort of celebration from, you know, our photographer Mike Diskin's been with us from the start. So we've kind of had these like horn art pieces that we place around that,
nice.
You know, previously we used for various song lyrics from the different artists. And this year we're going to do, you know, a mashup of the various photos that he sort of hand selected. So we're going to kind of celebrate the anniversary that way. And you know, it's a different way to use a piece of art that we've used before.
Yep.
So I'm eager to see how that turns out.
Yeah. And you guys have a lot of different elements. Like you mentioned the ballet, you guys have a lot of comedy acts coming in. What was your, I don't know, inspiration behind that? Because it's sort of abnormal for a music festival to be including sort of these comedy and dance companies and everything.
Yeah, I think for us, we've always wanted to celebrate all the arts, right? And, you know, back in our previous life, we used to bring bands into the MFA and literally have bands perform in front of millions of dollars worth of art.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a logistical fun hurdle.
Yep.
You can't bring, you know, beautiful paintings out into the middle of a field.
Exactly.
You know, so you got to dial that back a little bit. But from the angle of, you know, yes, being able to work with the ballet, you know, Imogene Heap doing some spoken word stuff this year, the comedians, our expanded sort of DJ programming that we're using in the arena. I think some of it is spurned by like our, you know, our board and our chairman specifically, just very, you know, diverse culturally, lives in Germany. You know, we've done a lot of work as a company in Denmark. So they have like the Louisiana Museum there, which is a very high-end modern art museum. Mm-hmm. So I think you get inspired by that sort of stuff. We don't have the land, you know, like even our company did in Wisconsin or like a Coachella does, to do these like monolithic public art installs.
Yep.
So we have to figure out a way to do it. So the arena has kind of been a good way to do it. And I guess we've sort of tried to expand our art and culture of the programming with performances versus like large structural art.
Yeah.
So I think we end up down that rabbit hole because of everything else that adds up to what we do in 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, it's definitely impressive. And you mentioned a little bit about like the logistics behind it, but what's the hardest thing about planning a music festival? Like, I know we sort of got an insight to like the Fyre Festival and where everything went wrong with that through a bunch of documentaries, but what would you say is like the hardest part in overall?
I mean, in my world, it's really just getting the amount of people that you have to sort of wrangle all dialed in on like our timeline.
Yep.
Right? So this is what my company focuses on from, you know, October, November pretty much to May.
Yep.
But we hire experts, right? And experts are on other jobs.
Yep.
Right? So it's a lot of, hey, I know you're on a job right now and I'm sure it's really tough and you're working 20 hours a day, but I really need you to answer these four questions about my show 3 months from now. So we've learned over the years that if you let the experts go show to show, you're stuck holding the bag until May and you can't deliver the experience you want to deliver.
Yep.
So it's really conditioning your group of experts, right? Your group of people that make this entire thing run behind the scenes. Be like, yes, listen, like, we're going to have, you know, bi-weekly calls, like, starting in January. I get it. You won't make all of them, but, you know, you got to make some of them. And really making sure, you know, that you're never standing there 3 days before the doors need to open and you have an insurmountable problem.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where people are like, I don't get it. What do you do in September, right? And
yeah,
you know, me personally, right, it's like, you know, I'm part of, you know, artist calls sporadically, you know, or we're usually doing, you know, something marketing based, and we do of course, like a lot of other smaller events as a company, but you're like, no, I'm either replacing an expert or, you know, contracting with an expert, and
yep,
then, you know, we start calls fairly on. You got a deep dive on good, bad, you know, from the year before, you know, mm-hmm, and you gotta sort of start billing in. Usually you have your headliners by then, so you can start deciding on staging and things,
yep,
like that. So yeah, it's a long process, but I think that, to sum it up, the hardest part is getting all your very awesome department heads to focus,
yep,
well in advance and not say, well, I'll figure that out on site, because
yep,
it's not the right way to do the job.
Yeah, well, how far in advance do you guys start planning everything out? Like, when do you get headliners down? And I'm sure it's months.
Yeah, I mean, headliners and things, we're having conversations now about next year.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, on that end of things. And even some of the, you know, smaller bands, you know, somebody who performs, you know, two or three spots before the end of the night, you know, some of them know what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some are like, hey, we're going to record a record. We think it's going to be done at this time. We're
yep,
anticipating it comes out at this time. And we're going to go back on the road. Like, we've been given the green light. So they'll start floating around like, hey, the band might be on the East Coast in May. Are you interested? So that part starts like now, you know?
Yeah, wow.
And yeah, logistically, start lining all that stuff. I mean, really starts, you know, early August,
mm-hmm,
depending on your, like, level of success, right? If you're really happy with your team, yeah, you start chatting in August about, hey, we're doing this again, right?
Yep,
like,
yep,
you liked it, I liked it. Like,
we're all on the same page here. Let's
so,
make it happen again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's 10 months.
Yeah, wow. That's impressive. And so there's no real, like, off-season for you guys then. You're always sort of trying to...
Yeah, we always joke that, you know, we're going to have this off-season where we all, like, go away for a while. Right?
Yeah, yeah, we're relaxed a little bit.
You know, depending on, you know, there's been years where we've had, you know, 3 music festivals and a beer festival and 100 smaller events as a company.
Wow, yeah.
So, you know, those years you leapfrog festival to festival.
Yep.
You know, and then there's been years where we just have Boston Calling. So it depends a lot on that, too. The just basic workload for what our company's doing.
Yeah. And you mentioned you had your start in radio, but how did you sort of make that transition into sort of like the music festival arena?
It was
arena?
Made a little bit for me.
Yeah.
The radio station I was working with closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a job with the Boston Globe, and we built sort of a digital online radio station. My partner was still with the old company that was, it had a newspaper and a radio station, and the newspaper was still relevant. But really, you know, you were doing that, and, you know, it was a great place to cut your teeth. It was a great place to get your start at any career.
Mm-hmm.
But we had done so many events with them because it really was, you know, an event-driven media company. So we had the contacts, and once we started talking to the people at City Hall, there was a lot of excitement, you know,
yep,
behind it. Initially, we started talking to sort of our, you know, it was a smaller version of our board at that point. They were really excited. So, yeah, the fever was quick. You know,
yep,
like,
yep,
you lamented, you know, leaving something you had done for 9 or 10 years, but the fever to do this was really quick.
Yep, came out pretty quickly. And who are you, or who's your dream act of landing? Or
like outside of relevancy?
Outside of
like
relevancy
just
or anything.
Just
somebody you would want to see.
Tom Waits.
Oh, okay.
I mean, hates performing live, never
yeah,
performs live outside. I mean, it's like...
Nearly
that's
impossible.
The, yeah, that's the impossible one, right?
Yep,
if the
yep,
question really is, like, me personally, outside
mm-hmm,
of, like, the brand Boston Calling,
yep,
like, what would I book if it was, like, Mike Snow can do anything? It would be Tom Waits by a mile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is there anybody, then, that Boston Calling's been trying to get for a long period of time?
Not really, like, trying. You
okay,
know,
there's
a lot of bands that come through that, you know, like Pearl Jam, for instance, right? Like,
yep,
not that we've ever, like, really tried that hard. The name is always there as a band we'd love to get.
Yep.
The dude loves baseball stadiums.
Yeah.
Like, Eddie Vedder loves baseball, and it's very public, and he
yep,
loves baseball stadiums. You know, so it's like, I don't really know what it would take at the end of the day,
yep,
you know, to be like, well, could you play us instead of Fenway? Like,
yeah,
you know, and it's, we've never gone very deep in the conversation.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
there's a few bands. Like, I mean, Tool was one that crossed off, like, the bucket list of...
Yep.
I just never thought when we started this company we were ever going to say, hey, we booked Tool as our headliner. And it was amazing. And I'm more of like a metal punk guy anyway. So
mm-hmm,
it's like, you know, the last 2 years to be able to book, you know, Tool as a headliner. And then we slotted in Converge after a cancellation. And it
wow,
was like,
that's
this
nice,
is like the greatest
thing nice,
ever. You know, it's one of those things that, I absolutely never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, when we kind of had a lane of sort of, you know, kind of, you know, hip hop, rap, and a lot of alt and, you know, straight rock and, mm-hmm. and even, you know, little folk or whatever along the way, but it all kind of mixed into this. It's basically alternative, right? It's like that was our background.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of what we felt was our niche kind of at a festival level when we were on the plaza. So you never just think off the cuff and like, well, maybe we'll get Tool.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess.
It sort of just happens accidentally, kind of like.
It certainly did. It was just one of those things of they were interested and we were super interested. And yeah, it was a gamble, but it paid off. It
yeah.
was great.
Yeah. Would you say these last 2 years then have been, or the last couple of years have been like instrumental growth, like... You would never thought the festival would go to the lengths it has, or
yeah, I mean when we were, you know, looking at doing this for the media company, you know, I think we had like M83 and, you know, Vampire Weekend, mm-hmm. AWOL Nation, and it has nothing to do with like the size of the band. It was like that's what the media company supported, right? Yep. That was what the radio station played, right? And yep. it was a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
So even when we transitioned this into our own thing at the first festival, it was the National and Of Monsters and Men and Marina and the Diamonds.
Yep.
And our radio station background played that. Like
yep.
we knew people from like that camp, right? And if you kind of go along, it was like, you know, Jack Johnson was probably the biggest band, you know, we kind of dealt with, you know, it was like, okay, wow, you know, and then it was like, Sia was like yeah. a moment, you know, and obviously like the Pixies were the first band I ever called the agent
when
I had no idea what I was doing.
Wow.
Like, hey, I used to work at radio. Wow. I still have your email. I just want to call you. Yeah, the guy was like, awesome. we're in the studio. So, you know, so I mean, the Pixies was certainly like one of those moments, you know? And yeah, then when we kind of left the plaza, like it was pretty big unknown. You know, we had Mumford confirmed for that first year, and that still didn't feel like out of our element. I mean, mm-hmm. they're so much bigger, but I still kind of equate them with like I saw the first show at the Middle East because you know it was just
yep.
part of the fabric. We were, you know, broadcasting in Dublin for St. Paddy's Day, and they came in and played like kind of before they were big in the States.
Yep.
So it was like that. Perception-wise, for me as somebody working for the company, I was sort of like, yeah, it's Mumford.
Is it
I mean, I know they're massive, but yeah, it's just Mumford.
It is,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so that one, you know, and Chance kind of had exploded, but yeah. I hadn't really, like, followed his career. So it was, you know, mm-hmm. there was a lot of one of those things. But then, again, it was like, you know, Tool took the stage, and, you know, thankfully by Sunday night, things are usually pretty quiet, and you're like, okay, this is, like, a thing.
Yep.
And then landing Eminem, we were like, oh, my God, right? Like,
yeah.
like this
no,
is
huge.
This is next. This
yeah.
is totally next level. So... yeah, there's still a starstruck because I, you know, followed music for so many years, and then there's the secondary like, yeah, like this is the level of the festival. This is when you were putting 40,000 butts in seats. Like
mm-hmm.
this is the type of act that you need to do that, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, there's been some painful growth moments of just, you know, budgeting and having the right people and the amount of like, you know, transportation vans you need because our site's big but not that big.
Yeah,
you know, so
yep,
there's a
yep.
lot of like funny behind the scenes
yeah.
you know growth. But yeah, if you know this was 2013 and we were having this conversation, no, I would have never said Tool. I would have never said Eminem.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
you know, nobody knew who Chance was at that point, but
yeah.
like you would have never sort of said that. So yeah, then, you know, walking into this year with, you know, 21 and Travis, who just came through and blew out the garden,
yep.
and you know, Tame Impala to me is like, that's my Mumford, right?
Yep,
because,
yep.
like, we had Tame Impala on the plaza. They were amazing. We were playing them at our radio station before we left, you know?
Yeah.
And now you're like,
now
oh, my
huge.
God.
Yeah.
You're a headliner now.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, it's
yeah.
fun to watch.
Yeah.
And even at the Odessa level, like, people are bananas for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, they're...
And it's like... they have a million lasers and a million video
yep.
screens
yep,
and you're
yep.
like, I hope this all fits.
this
so.
Yeah. So you sort of get to see like the growth of the artist as you progress through like the growth of a company as well.
Yeah, and you're seeing right now that like live performance for bands is like very important again.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was like a little trough where, you know, yeah, we put up a floor lighting package and we have a backdrop and the music, right? We
yeah,
play the music and it is important, but I think as especially music festivals added more, you know, curated food and just like cohesive signage and
mm-hmm.
large art, I think even to some degree the bands are like, well, we have to outdo
yep.
the other stuff you could go and do, right?
Yep.
And they are, you know, they're yeah. you know, the Tame Impala's production at Coachella, you were like,
insane.
I've stood in that field.
Yeah.
It's a really big stage, but like when Portishead played, it was just Portishead on the stage.
Yep.
Now, that was 10 years ago.
Yep.
You know, and this year it's like every person that hit that stage, you're like, look at this show. Like,
yeah.
unbelievable, you know? And that's the artist. That comes out of the artist. Like, I don't pay for that. That's like, they call up, they say, I got five trucks, here's the diagram, like, we got to build it. Awesome. You're, like, blown away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think to some degree, festivals have been pretty fortunate as of, like, the last 2 or 3 years that, like, the production element, that, you know, Eminem's had, like, a storyline.
Yeah.
You know, Jay-Z and Beyonce on their last tour, they had a friggin' movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a movie that correlated with the show. You're like, this is, you know, this is pretty unbelievable. Yep. So I think, you know, those things have all benefited the consumer, where, you know, I can see people like, God, dude, it's like, am I really going to be out there in the field and crowded or cold or just whatever, you know, like, it's a lot, you know, but I love this band, and the payoff's there.
Yeah.
The payoff is certainly in the band performance.
Yeah.
So if what we do as a festival is good, you know, but not amazing on its own, now it's like, yeah, but wait till you see this Tame Impala.
Exactly,
you
know, exactly.
Wait till you see this insane, you know, set piece that, you know, 21 Pilots is going to light on fire.
It's crazy. So,
yeah, that part is getting better and better.
Yeah. Do you guys get to sit and watch this all unfold, like all of this set unfold, or are you guys running around behind the scenes, like trying to make things work?
No. So like, you know, a lot of this gets loaded in overnight, and, you know, we're getting our 4 hours of sleep or whatever it is. And, yeah, during the day, it's listen, if you've hired the experts, right, if you've hired the right people and you've prepped them, you know, there's a million small conversations. But they're just because you want to be a perfectionist, mm-hmm. and you want that Disney mentality where, like, the attendee never sees, like, the garbage.
Yep.
So, you know, some of it is sure, you're just maintaining, like, that level of, like, guys, I know it's Sunday. I know your feet hurt. I know you're tired. Come on. One more day. You look great. You know, it's like you do a lot of, like, pep talking. Again, if things are going really well, it's not pouring or, like, there's no tornado coming or something.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but usually we all kind of, like, rotate. There's always, you know, a band a day or two bands a weekend that were sort of like, hey, listen, at 4 o'clock I'm turning my radio off and I'm gonna go just, like, watch this band for 20 minutes because I need, like, a sanity check, and this is my band, you know. So, yeah, to some degree, yes.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, a lot of, like, the headliner stuff, you know, it's more about, you know, for me it's like, okay, I know this is happening, like, I want to run backstage and I literally want to see how this stage crew, like, you know, is going to wheel out this car from backstage, light it on fire, you know, and it's like, you know, the pyro guys are there.
Exactly,
and, you know, they're in this little metal box with their, like, headsets on, you know, it's cool. Like, that's, you know, that's the enjoyment of, like, what I do, is kind of, like, looking at that stuff, because it's well out of my element. It's like, sure, I know who I hired, I know the permit I pulled.
Yep.
I'm not certified to blow anything up, but that guy is, right?
So,
like,
yeah,
so it's like, you know, I'm standing next to the Boston Fire Department. I'm like, is this all cool? The guy's like, no, this is all code. This is good. You're like, okay, awesome.
Great, yeah,
in
sure.
Like, 5 minutes, they're going to do
it. Let's go.
So, yeah, it's a lot of, like, nerd, like,
behind the scenes.
But, you know, again, there's, like, some moments, you know, I certainly watched, you know, the better part of Converge's set, and it's just like, you know, Tool, certainly, I think I saw about half, Eminem maybe about half, you know, because you're getting ready for, like, the end of the night, and you know, you have to check and make sure that your exits are good, and all those people are not watching Eminem, right? So, yeah, usually about a half of a headliner set's about as good.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, no, anytime I go to a music festival or a large concert, I'm always fascinated by, like, what's happening behind the stage,
and
all the 1,000 different elements that go into, like, the production side of it. It's insane.
It's always strange to me that this aura of, like, well, I want to go backstage.
Yeah.
You know, and I always tell people at our festival, I'm like, well, you just ride the Ferris wheel. You'll see everything, that's back there. It's pretty non-exciting.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not in the band. You're not going to jump in there.
It's mostly wires.
And, like, party and, like, hang out, right? It's like, if you get back there, you're like,
it's
cool.
Wires and, like,
I'm
going to
grab a Gatorade out of this bucket. Like, you know, it's like, there's no bar back there.
Yeah.
There's no, like, hang. There's no party. You know, it's like, some festivals have backstage, but most festivals, that area that you want to get into, you want to get into, like, the company's hospitality suite. Like, you want to be back there, like, where some chef is, like, doling out awesome food, some mixologist's cocktails going, like, that shit ain't backstage.
Nope. We guarantee it's not. And a couple, like, closing questions. Do you have any advice for anybody looking to go into the music industry of any kind, like radio, like how you started out, or concerts or anything?
I've kind of always had, like, the same, you know, sort of recommendation for people, is that, like, you gotta just take that lower level part time job. The point of that job isn't to make you do dumb things.
Mm-hmm.
The point of that job is to prove you're not a weirdo.
Yep.
And that can mean a million different things, but this is a business that attracts very strange people for a million different reasons. You know, again, some people who thought they could be alone at 4:30 in the morning and, like, be entertaining on a microphone, right? It's like, that's a special person. Right? You could be, you know, you could be a radio engineer, special person.
Yep.
Dynamite guy, special person, right? But, you know, there's a lot of funny different personalities. So I always tell people, I'm like, listen, volunteer, like, we hire a lot of part-time labor, but a lot of festivals, it's straight volunteer for your ticket, you know? And you will eventually meet, you know, a different, you'll work for a department head that's like, hey, wait, like, next time I come through here, like, do you, you know, are you trying to do this? And then you get to taste kind of all the different departments, you know, because nobody knows.
Yep.
You know, nobody knows what I do with my partner Brian does, like, during the event. So, you know, much like I knew, you know, radio-wise, it's like, oh, I, like, sat with the production and the imaging director. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't really that interesting. Fun to learn, but nah, I'm not going to be that guy.
Yep.
So I think a lot of people are like, oh, I just love music. I just want to work festivals. And you're like, great. Go work as many festivals as you can.
Yep.
For as many departments as you can while you have, like, youth on your side. And you'll figure it out. You'll be like, I definitely don't want to do those five jobs, but these five are super interesting. And then hopefully you've proven you're there for the right reasons and you're not kind of weird and everybody like, and you'll get hired. You just will. It's, we've, you know, when we started, we had a lot of like our radio hangover people that worked, you know, all the site ops jobs. I mean, we've cycled through those people four different times, you know, because it's not a job that, you know, there are some sort of lifers, but you do it a couple times and then you get hired for artist relations or you get hired in stage production and then two festivals later you're a rigger and you're like traveling with Drake, you know. We had a guy who's like started our first festival by our third festival or by our third year, sixth festival. He literally was on tour with Drake as like a spotlight operator.
That's crazy.
He just like found his niche in this world of like, I never really knew I was going to work like on the stage. Exactly. You know, it's like we had a crazy guy, you know, old guy who was the carpenter for Slayer for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's crazy. I can't even imagine what in the world. Like,
yeah, he's seen.
He's like, yeah, I was just working at the garden. They said I was handy. They said, do you want to come on the road? I was like, sure.
Okay.
Like, there are weird things that, that absolutely happen like that. Yeah. And there's just a ton of work. And there's so many of these, especially like, you know, production labor companies and just the unions throughout the country. There's just so much work on stages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's doing live shows. I mean, everybody's building new venues. So, yeah, I think there's an awful lot of ability and jobs out there.
Yeah, yeah. Any other sort of closing thoughts you want to give on Boston Call and your experience with it?
No, it's humbling. You know, it's nice. It's amazing that, you know, the amount of, you know, people want to talk to us and interview us and those things. And, you know, we try to be, you know, kind of coy about it and try to express something new when we do these things. So, no, I just encourage people to check out the brand and, you know, keep pace with us, and some lineups you're going to love and some you're not going to come to, and we get that. But, you know, we're hoping that gradually, you know, maybe 10 more editions will be pretty synonymous with Boston, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. Well, thank you for your time today.
No problem.
Yeah, that's all I have.